Welcome to the Conservative Thought Hour, where America always comes first.
I'm proud to be an American.
Each week, we bring you captivating guests who will speak on many topics of national interest. We are not interested in telling you what to think or how to think. We have faith that you can do that for yourself. Our interest is to bring you information to help you form your own opinions. As always, the views expressed by our guests are their own and are not necessarily shared by the hosts or the station you are listening to. Get ready for enlightenment with the Conservative Thought Hour.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
And now, here are your hosts, Carrie Black and Rick Stanard.
And welcome to another hour of the Conservative Thought Hour. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Nothing but spectacular, Carrie.
You always are, my friend. I love that about you. It makes for a good show. Another thing that makes for a really good show today is our guest, Rick. It is Mr. Julio Gonzalez. He founded the Gonzalez Family Office and is the CEO and founder of Engineered Tax Services Incorporated. ETS, which is short for that, is the country's largest specialty tax engineering firm, which specializes in the preservation of wealth and United States job creation through IRS engineering-based services, which include research and development, manufacturing, tax credit and grant studies, energy tax incentive studies, cost segregation, depreciation studies for buildings, and opportunity zone studies, real estate, state and local incentive studies, and alternative tax optimization studies. He joins us today. We're going to be speaking about a lot of things, Julio. You're going to be discussing the negative effects on the U.S. economy as a result of the latest global tax deal and your views on the impending mass exodus of large corporations to more tax-friendly countries. Thank you so much for being here. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. My pleasure. Happy to be on. Thank you for having me.
I have been so excited about this interview. You are somebody whose name I knew before we scheduled you. So this is a real pleasure for me. Let me start it off. We're all wondering what the new Biden tax plan means for us. Now, there's two of us. There's people, individuals, and there's businesses. Can you give us an outline of what's coming down the track for us?
Yeah. You know, and, you know, I don't have good news here, but, you know, and I know taxes is not the most sexy topic, but, you know, it's obviously an important one. So what we have is now an estimated $4 trillion, you know, infrastructure bill, which really is called the human infrastructure bill, which means it's really a social welfare bill, right? So 90% of this infrastructure, human capital bill, is for social programs, child credits and employment, and other types of welfare programs. And how are they going to pay for this $4 trillion, right? The plan is to raise the income tax rates for hardworking individuals. They're going to raise the capital gains rates for people that invest in businesses, invest in the stock market. They're going to tax unrealized gains. They're going to tax estate taxes. So ultimately, they're going to tax the people that work and the people that create business and create jobs. And they're going to redistribute that tax collection through these tax raises to these social welfare programs.
Well, Julio, I can remember watching our president on television say a number of times that if we don't make $400,000, our taxes aren't going up. Are you telling me he's not been telling us the truth?
Yeah, no, he's not been telling you the truth. And really, what he's saying is, if you're under $400,000, which is really $200,000 per individual, you are not going to have an income tax rate increase. He's going to raise the income tax rates for people over that level, right? But what he's not saying, because that doesn't pander well to his audience, is that we are going to raise the payroll taxes for every hard worker. And he's estimating a 12% increase in your payroll taxes, which the employer has to to match, right? So that's not income tax, right? That's payroll taxes. He's going to increase the and reinstate the Obamacare health care tax, right? 3.8% that everyone is going to have to pay. He's going to tax, increase the gain, capital gains tax, but he's going to tax on unrealized gains. And what that means is you've put money in your 401 plan and you put $10 in, now it's worth $100. So you've made $90, but you haven't realized that because you haven't sold the stock. But he's going to tax that unrealized gain for people that, you know, contribute to the stock market or invest their money. And ultimately, you know, that's where he's going to get you. And plus, you know, the death taxes he wants to increase.
Yep.
Is he also going to do unrealized capital gains on the growth of the value of our residents?
Yeah, I mean, everything is on the table right now. And that is the biggest problem, because can you imagine you have property taxes and then you have this unrealized gain on all your assets, your money in your stock, 401k, your real estate, you know, your baseball card collection. And they want to now tax that unrealized gain, come up with that valuation, and collect those taxes. So, you know, okay, so if you're under 200,000, 400,000, maybe your income tax rate stays the same, but now you're getting all these other taxes that are not income taxes, but payroll taxes, unrealized taxes on your gains and your estate. So he's going to get it from everyone. But look, when you have these kind of tax increases, you know, it's for the middle class, right? The the CEOs of the big companies, they'll find tax structures, they'll mitigate their taxes, and it gets stuck down to the middle class.
Yep. Well, what happens, you know, houses are going up maybe $20,000-$25,000 a year now in most areas. So let's say for 5 years, we pay taxes on $20,000 of unrealized capital gains for 5 years, or $100,000. But the market goes down and we actually sell the house for a loss. Will we be able to get our money back from the government?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It can go both ways, right? So you're going to get taxed on the gain. On the loss, you can certainly, you know, write that loss off. And, you know, but that's not good, right? Because what happens is we're going to tax these gains. So, of course, everyone's going to sell off their stocks, right? They're going to sell these properties. And then you're going to have a sell-off on these assets. And ultimately, everyone's going to lose, you know, that value, right? The market's going to go down. The housing market's going to go down because no one wants to be taxed on those assets. And then, you know, we have the economic downfall from this event.
Well, it'll certainly make you scratch your head and wonder where you should put the money that you've got. You know, what's
right? Well,
what's a safe haven anymore?
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, you know, a lot of people are moving the money out of the country, right? They're going to Puerto Rico. They're going to these offshore entities, right? And, you know, look, you know, for people in New York and California during the pandemic, the state continued to raise the income tax rates, continued to create other additional taxes. And what did we see? We saw the big corporations, the billionaires, the millionaires leave California and go to Texas. And the same with the people in New York. They left, the hedge fund people left and came to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to now do this at the federal level, well, you know, the companies that can move will, and they'll go to Puerto Rico, they'll go to Ireland, both companies that are not going to agree to this G20 summit. And, you know, they're going to go offshore. We just did such a great job when we lowered the income tax rate in 2017. And we brought all these companies back and created all these jobs. But as quickly as they can come in, they can leave as quickly. We've certainly seen the jobs leave New York and California. And we would see the same thing at the federal level.
Well, you talked about companies going offshore. We've got this international minimum corporate tax of 15% that is being hoisted upon not only us, but a lot of the world. Mm-hmm. What's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, just another way to raise taxes, right, that the Biden administration, you know, pursued. And you got about 20 other countries that are willing to get into this global tax program where they're going to tax these multinational corporations at a minimum tax rate. But, you know, the issue is here, the fine print is that, you know, of the 20 countries, they don't include Ireland that didn't agree to it. They don't include Puerto Rico or the Caribbean. Now, that's where 99% of the companies will offshore. Plus, it didn't include 180 other countries that purposely do not want to be there because they want the benefit of low tax rates to incentivize those companies coming there. So, you know, like you see some of the states now, Mississippi, Oklahoma, they're starting to remove their state income tax rates because they see the benefit that Florida and Texas are having. So, you know, I mean, they can, these 20 countries can agree to something, but no company is going to go there.
Yeah. If you're just joining us. Go ahead.
The sound we're hearing is the sound of thousands and hundreds of thousands of jobs being sucked out of the U.S.
That's what's really happening. That's already happening. And that will continue. And, you know, people are going to experience that hardship, I think, for the next, you know, couple of years until this gets turned around. Look, we, you know, if there's any silver lining, it's that for this to all get done, we just need one senator on the Democratic side to say no. Now, will one of them say no? Will Manchin come back and say, I can't do this to my constituents in my state? Will there be someone else? You know, that's really the battle. So, you know, Biden and his administration and majority of the Democratic Senate would like to get this done immediately. So you got these couple of senators hanging out saying, I'm not so sure, but, you know, it comes down to, can they be bought out? Or does this administration get this passed? And then do ultimately we go into a deep depression. This is like Back to the Future. This is Jimmy Carter all over again. If history were to repeat itself, we saw what the same tax plan, the same economic plan, and what happened. We had high interest rates, and they voted them out.
Well, it looks to me like they haven't really thought about the details of this. I mean, if they put in place an international 15% minimum corporate tax, if they're able to do it, who's going to decide when they want that corporate tax to go up to 20%?
Yeah, I mean, these countries will have to globally agree to that date.
I just don't see countries agreeing to destroying their own manufacturing bases. So the whole thing looks like an idea unplanned.
Well, there's no doubt. An idea that's unplanned or not well thought out. You know, if he's to raise these, you know, $4 trillion to give to social welfare programs, it sounds great to his audience. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think he's trying to pander to the people that he wants to vote for him.
Well, let me ask you this question. It's totally off the wall. We see the super rich in this country, the Jeff Bezos and others, supporting the left. And by the left, I'm grouping together progressives, socialists, communists, and Democrats, because I don't think there's any way to tell one from the other anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, what is a super rich guy like Jeff Bezos, who in his entire history hasn't evidenced any care for the downtrodden? What's he doing supporting the left? What's
his
goal?
I think, yeah, I mean, here's the goal, I think. And Republicans, you know, the conservatives are pro-business, right? And the Democrats are not pro-business. So, you know, it's the lesser of the two evils, right? Do I take the higher income tax rates and just move on? Or do I face the Democrats coming at me for antitrust and break my company up? And so I think the less of the two evils, he is on board and supporting, the Democrats so they don't, agree to antitrust and break them up.
I would like to offer perhaps an alternative thought. There are groups, not a lot, but there are groups of extraordinarily wealthy families around the world. And, they own businesses like crazy, like Jeff Bezos. I'm wondering if these people aren't looking to create a global environment where they're not run by countries. They don't owe any fealty to any country. They're their own country.
I think no question about it. I think that's certainly the end game, is to do exactly what you're saying. And I think they're going down the path of least resistance to get there. I think you're absolutely right.
Yep. I firmly believe that they're trying to weaken this country irretrievably so that once this country falls, there won't be any country standing for freedom and democracy.
That's right.
And that'll be the environment that these big multinational rich people want.
I think you're 100% right.
Yeah. Scary thought, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's so scary. It really is. I mean, we wake up every day as business owners and see that this probably could be the end game. And, what is the solution? How do we stop it? So I think you're right. I mean, that's a big concern.
Mm. Well, the infrastructure tax bill, with all the added taxes, even if they raise taxes on the middle class, there is no chance they'll come up with $3 or $4 trillion for the tax bill, plus all the other spending they want to do.
Right. So the balance will have to be print money. Right. And that's, basically how they'll accomplish that deficit, which will be a big gap, right? You just print the money, devalue the country, and, create an issue where people can, other countries, China, can start coming in and using their dollar value to, make the acquisitions here, which they're probably on board with.
Well, we've got a lot to be scared of, I'll tell you that. Now, let's switch for a moment away from taxes and talk about the border crisis. The news now is that Mayorkas at Homeland Security has told the Cuban refugees that they cannot come here. And if they go across the sea, it's too dangerous. Don't come here. Well, that really doesn't sound like him. If he was concerned about danger, he would have stopped the triangle countries from sending their refugees on an impossibly long journey where a lot of them died. So, concern over health has never been his issue. Why, with the Cubans, is it now his issue?
Yeah, it's really devastating, right? I mean, to see what's going on there. My family came from Cuba in 1958, and, historically, the only people that Castro let come over here, were the prisoners and the criminals. So, I think ultimately, and if you see, or you talk to our family there, or you see what's going on, they are, the military is out there suppressing them, taking away their communications, and basically, arresting these people. And we'll probably never see these leaders that are helping, create an outcry for democracy. They have no food. They have no water. They have no medical supplies.
No
and that's
future.
What's creating this, right? This creating this outcry we have not seen in six decades since Castro regime took over. And, you know, it's just horrible to watch.
Well, the first thing that any evil regime must do when they take over, and they must continue to do, is to destroy their political foes. And that's certainly what's happening in Cuba now.
Yeah, meanwhile, the world sits by, right? And, you know, and doesn't provide assistance, right? I mean, United States, I mean, we could all, as a global, you know, community, you know, help and bring support there, but we're all in this. You know, we're all just letting it happen.
I can't help but be a little bit suspicious. The Cuban community in Florida voted very strongly for the Republicans in the last few elections. And I can't help but wonder if this is payback for Mayorkas.
No question it's payback. I mean, you saw in the last election, the Hispanic vote was dominant for President Trump. They came out hugely for the president. And, you know, I think no doubt there's big concern there with Mayorkas and, you know, the related parties. And, you know, this is the penalty that we're seeing.
Well, it's embarrassing to watch the southern border. And hats off to Governor Abbott and what he and Ducey are doing in Arizona on the border, and they're going to start rebuilding the wall. Just
thank goodness.
Their states.
Thank goodness. And it's great to see, you know, Governor DeSantis and some of the other governors helping and bringing, you know, troops to help support their efforts. You know, because you saw it 180,000 a month coming to the border.
Wow.
We don't know who they are. We know that they're bringing the fentanyl in, that they're bringing the criminals, they're bringing the drugs, you know, combatant people from other countries. And boy, what a massive danger. And the current administration just to stand down and encourage it and, and you know, get them here so they can continue to vote illegally.
I want to know how poor immigrants with no financial wherewithal in the world from Africa can be coming across our southern border. Who's paying for them to go from Africa to Mexico?
You know, it's a dark web, isn't it? You know, and not only Africa, but Iran, Afghanistan, the Middle East. We're seeing that as well.
Oh,
and I think we're going to pay. I mean, you know, we were talking about that this morning in our conference, that is this the next step towards our next 9/11, that we're allowing them to come over to assemble and, you know, create the next big act of terrorism in our country? Because it certainly seems like that's where it can go with what we're allowing.
Julio, wow, this is interesting information. Do you have any more thoughts on the southern border crisis that's been? Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, you know, like we discussed, thank goodness for some of the governors, you know, taking action against the federal government and going through and creating these structures and team to limit the escalation of really what is illegal immigrants, criminals, and drug smugglers that are basically coming here to, one, you know, take advantage of our social welfare programs and ultimately create what could be, you know, mass destruction, really. And, you know, that's the ultimate goal. And, you know, fortunately, we have a good couple of governors, but we need more, right? We, you know, this type of social welfare that class we're creating that the government wants to sponsor through tax increases to continue to have, you know, a party that's growing in terms of voting for them is dangerous. And I'm glad that, you know, some of the good governors here are trying to stop it.
Well, I believe that the real battle coming in the future is between the states and the federal government. Our founders were kind enough to give us, the people, a tool to protect us against the federal government. And that tool is the 10th Amendment. And the 10th Amendment reserves to the states all powers not specifically given to the federal government. And we're starting to see states exercise their abilities and their rights in kicking the federal government out of authority. They're doing it with the Second Amendment. They're doing it with the Biden administration wanting to send these illegal refugees from the southern border to little towns in various states to try and change the voting patterns in those towns.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's like gerrymandering by proxy. And I think the states have got to absolutely stand up and say no to the federal government.
Well, I think you're right. And, you know, we have a great example of that here in Florida with Governor DeSantis. And, you know, he immediately stopped the federal, you know, unemployment compensation going to people in the state of Florida that aren't looking for jobs and can stay home and get paid to not work. So he cut that off. And that was a great step. He also limited, like you said, with, you know, communications with the tech companies here and, you know, eliminating, you know, some of the school issues, right, that we're having and definitely cutting off and supporting, you know, illegal immigrants. So we have a great example of Governor DeSantis. I think you're seeing other governors get in line with him and create that faction between our states and the federal government.
Absolutely. I think it becomes more and more obvious every day that the important elections for us out in the hustings are not the national elections. You know, who is president and who's a senator almost ceases to be important. What's important is who's running your state. And that means the governor and the state legislatures and the state district attorneys, they need to be strong and conservative.
Well, I agree. I mean, politics starts at a local level. You're absolutely right. And that is the key. And I like what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a lot of, you know, investment in conservatives making a concerted effort to really get behind, you know, good government officials in these key states. And I think you're absolutely right with that analysis.
Yeah, we came so close to having Gillum as governor, and we'd be a different state right now.
Ouch.
Had he been governor.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, when last time I saw President Trump at Mar-a-Lago, you know, I, you know, really came out in front of our group and thanked the president for, you know, helping him get Governor DeSantis elected, because we remember he was well down in the polls. And, you know, but when President Trump got behind him, you know, I think that gave him the votes needed, you know, plus all his effort, of course, to, you know, win that election and keep the, you know, this crazy lunatic that, you know, does drugs and have these strange parties in Miami out of office. Oh, my goodness. What would we have faced?
Scary.
But I think President Trump was so helpful.
DeSantis is doing such a good job that even some Democrats are protecting him against the national media. It's amazing to watch.
Yeah, it's nice to see now. I also saw some other Democrats saying that he was responsible for the building collapse in Miami.
Oh, so, come on.
You know, how ridiculous, right? I mean, he's doing such an incredible job.
Yeah. Well, let's change the topic now. I'm going to introduce a topic that has to be near and dear to your heart. Jeff Bezos. And what in the world is he doing now in the accounting world? Give us the lowdown, will you?
Well, you know, let's ask the audience, right? How many people even knew that Jeff Bezos and Amazon now have the highest valued accounting firm in the country?
Wow. I didn't.
No, I don't think anyone knows. I don't even think the accounting firms know. But, you know, his accounting firm now valued at $1.7 trillion is the largest valued accounting firm in the country. And so he's doing it in a way outside of the medium, but he invested over $250 million initially to get this started. And he's been very concentrated on getting small businesses and individuals to sign up through his new accounting firm called Pilot to have all their, you know, work done with him. And ultimately, the goal for him is to create, you know, a class of accounting firms, you know, those small accounting firms to be the cab drivers and for him to be the Uber and take over that whole client situation. And he really, I think the accounting firm necessarily doesn't see it coming, right? Nor did the cab drivers, nor did Blockbuster, right?
Wow.
And, you know, he is going to dominate. He's going to invest all the money to get all these small businesses and individuals to work with him, do it in an automated fashion through artificial intelligence. And ultimately, the end game here with him is to have such dominant power in the accounting and tax community that he can take over the tax code. I mean, that's really what he wants to do and control Congress from that aspect by having the largest accounting firm in the world.
Wow.
That's exactly what we talked about before with these rich mega people wanting to create an environment where they are their own countries.
That's right.
That's exactly what Bezos is trying to do.
And this is real. I mean, they are out there creating this social media presence, this active social media campaign, and they are very successfully signing up all these clients, all these firms. Meanwhile, when I talk to the small business accountants, you know, they tell me that they feel it's going to be okay because, you know, their clients still want to come in and shake their hand and meet with them. But the reality is, and I'm telling the accounting world this, is that you will be the cab driver because more and more this younger generation wants to do everything automated online.
Mm-hmm.
And they will gravitate towards this program. And for a lot of small businesses, they already have a lot of stuff listed on Amazon. So Amazon has all that data. And why do they want a big accounting world? They want data, right? They want all the data and they want control. And, you know, it's really David versus Goliath. And I tell the accounting firms, because, you know, listen, we do tax credits, right? And we do tax credits for, you know, several thousand accounting firms. We help them and their small businesses with these tax credits. But we have to fight, right? Because they're going after the end client. And we've got to do it in a way that keeps that end client wanting to stay with the small business owner. And that's an education process, both for the accountants and for those end users, right? I mean, it's nice to get your accounting work done online and you don't have to interact, but when that data is really being used for other purposes, you know, then that's when it gets dangerous.
So, Julia, what can accountants do to save themselves and their clients from this Bezos purported takeover of the accounting industry? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, they're going to have to be more consultative, right? Because accounting is, tax work is getting more and more automated. It's becoming more and more of a loss leader. So I think what people really want, small businesses, is they want to take advantage of, you know, an array of services, consultative services that are really helping them grow, whether it's tax credits and, you know, payroll issues and business consulting. You know, Jeff Bezos with his accounting firm already bought one of the big payroll companies, right? So more data. Now he's got more clients to consume through the payroll company that he acquired, which will now become clients. And so we've got to match that. You know, we've got to band together. We've got to come together as an alliance. We've got to find ways to be more consultative. We've got to find ways to bring down the cost through, you know, AI, because that's what he's betting on, that he can outmaneuver them.
No question. Why is it that most companies just don't get the tax credits and grants that they should get? Is that part of your practice, is helping companies get grants and tax credits?
We do. We do that through their accounting firm. So why is it so difficult? Why do, you know, the small business accounting firms miss this opportunity? Well, it's because our tax code is over 1 million pages, right? So that's why, because the big corporations that can lobby the House, the Senate, Congress, they make the tax code awfully complicated through their lobbying efforts, so that they're the ones that can maneuver and take advantage of all these tax incentives that they basically create with Congress. And ultimately, what I've done is said, okay, well, we understand your game plan. We understand what you're doing, and we understand what you're taking advantage of. But we've summarized that 1 million pages of tax code that you've complicated, and we're going to help the accounting firms that don't have that sophistication understand what we in combination can do to help their clients take advantage of these tax incentives that the public companies, the Fortune 500, the big tech companies take advantage of every day. You know, you read the papers and everyone's wondering why the big tech companies don't pay taxes. Well, it's because they know the roadmap through this 1 million pages of tax code and how to find the incentives and the tax benefits. So we just want to equal the playing field. And we work with the accounting firms to help them, you know, take something that's so technical and make it simple for them and their clients.
Sounds like a great business model.
Well, you know, I feel so honored because, you know, every day we're helping some small business owner that, you know, is doing great things in our country. They're creating employment. They're investing in the infrastructure of our community. They're creating jobs, and there's tax credits associated with that activity, but they typically don't have access to it because it's so complicated. And that's what we're trying to do, is uncomplicate it for them and their accountant, so that they're rewarded every day, just like Jeff Bezos is rewarded at a very significant level, or Bill Gates is rewarded with all these sophisticated tax credits for, you know, those activities. But we got to make sure that everyone has those activities.
Absolutely. I almost cry nowadays because I see the news, you know, Nancy Pelosi's husband invested $10 or $11 million the day after a vote was taken, or the day before a vote was taken, yep, in Congress. Now that's got to be insider trading. It breaks my heart to see things like that.
Well, I mean, that's insider trading, and, you know, the Biden family taking money from Asia, from China, Mm-hmm. You know, why he was vice president, why his son was out there creating all these relationships. And, you know, and obviously they not paying taxes on that. And the Department of Justice immediately dropping that case, right, as he became president. And you could go on and on, right? You could go and talk about the Clinton Foundation and that whole tax scheme they had there. And it goes on and on and on. There's so many examples. But ultimately, right, it's they can get away with it, right? And they control the purse strings.
And it's very similar to what's going on in China. Morality in China ceased to exist back when Mao Zedong was the head of the country. There just is no morality left. And I don't know how the world can continue without morality.
Well, I think ultimately that's, for me, the biggest fear is China. You know, no morality. And, you know, what they do is, you know, different than what we do here in our country, is that they invest in making these big tech companies there and stealing, you know, IP and all these significant code and trademarks and all that. And they invest in the companies, and then ultimately these successful companies in China become part of the China, you know, government. And, you know, we are weakening our dollar. We are allowing them to suppress us in a way. They control the administration here. And how do we stop this? How do we overcome this?
Well, I have
very detrimental.
I have a book that you may have read. It's by Roger Garside, who we're going to interview next week. He's a British retired diplomat who spent two tours in the embassy at in Beijing, and it's his idea that before the end of next year, Xi will be removed from office. That there are such incredible difficulties going on in China that they're not letting anybody know that they're almost out of business as a country. And it's a marvelous book. It's called China Coup, by a guy who was there in the midst of it for years. So
yeah,
I know.
Well,
we're
like
all
you,
afraid
I have
of
hope
China,
as well.
But we're all afraid of China, but they have their own problems too.
Yep,
sure.
And chief among them is they have no morality.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, okay, Julio, this has been an absolutely marvelous hour. We thank you so very much for joining us, and I look forward to maybe doing this again sometime in the future.
Well, certainly my honor, and I thank you both so much for what you're doing for the country and the education that you get out there, which is so vital. So thank you so much.
Well, we appreciate that, Julio. Where can our listeners find out more about you and get in touch with you and your company?
Yeah, so we're at engineeredtaxservices.com. We you know, put up tax tips every day for the small business owner, the individual, to make sure that they're working with their accounting firm to maximize their you know, tax advantages and preserve their wealth and create more jobs and create a better economy for all of us.
Okay. And again, give that website out for our listeners.
Yeah. So it's engineeredtaxservices.com.
And they can get in touch with you there. Thank you so much, Julio. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you.